Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman Wadler, with a preview of the latest episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're counting down the days to the 4th of July, so this week's theme is independence. After all, we're an independent food radio station.
HRN is a labor of love. Staff, hosts, and listeners all share the belief that storytelling can change the world, one bite or sound bite at a time.
We take a moment to ponder our founding mothers and fathers, specifically what they were drinking during the Revolutionary War.
Rum in various combinations with beer and cider would be the order of the day.
We highlight a story of self-sufficiency on the island of Vieques, Puerto Rico.
The biggest thing we did was to start a lot of fermented vegetables because we knew the first thing to go would be refrigerator trucks coming to the island.
And we examine the challenges facing independent grocery stores across the U.S.
The struggle is real, but the future looks bright.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, available at heritageradionetwork.org and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. It's Heritage Radio Network's annual summer fund drive, and we could certainly use your help if you are a first-time listener or a regular listener. Any amount that you would like to donate to us would be amazing. We are a completely volunteer-run nonprofit organization, bringing you 35, maybe even more now, shows every week from Bushwick, Brooklyn. I would also like to mention that you can get on heritageradionetwork.org/donate to donate to us. Also on July 14th, please check out the Happy Family Night Market. The website is happyfamilymkt.com. It's a celebration of Asian American cuisine, food, drink, panels, and more. I'm going to be leading a discussion with some of my favorite fermenters about Asian fermentation and what it all means. So I hope you'll come and check that out. Today's theme is the burger, the quintessential American food. I've always felt like when this time of year comes around, you have to choose sides. And I'm not talking about the World Cup or which American beer to drink on July 4th. I personally prefer a PBR or a Gansett to a Bud or a Coors. I'm talking about what you eat when you go to a party in someone's backyard or on a stoop or on a rooftop. Do you ask for a hot dog or do you ask for a burger? For me, it's always been a burger. The hot dog depends a lot on what's in it, how it was made, how it was smoked, but the burger relies a lot on the person on the grill and where the meat comes from. Even if they just bought frozen patties from Costco, did they salt them? Did they flip them too many times? Did they grind their own blend of chuck, flank, and shoulder, add in spices, grind in mushrooms? The possibilities really are endless. When I was 12, I had an internship at the Peabody Museum in New Haven, Connecticut. I got to sit in a dark basement office and help catalog dinosaur bones. The two things I remember learning from that internship are that I did not, in fact, want to pursue my childhood dream of being a paleontologist, and that Louis' lunch invented the hamburger. The Maillard reaction on the outside and the juiciness inside, the crunch of a well-developed crust and the flavor burst and texture of a ripe tomato, lettuce, mayo, mustard is my favorite way to enjoy a burger. Maybe with some Swiss on there, too. There's so many ways. In episode 103 of Feast Your Ears, you can hear me cook up a lamb burger with Brian Mayer. Those were delicious, and I think I'll be making some tonight. For years, I felt that the veggie burger was a thing born of our ability to make just about anything, but that didn't mean it was going to be any good. I watched vegan college roommates microwave fake veggie patties night after night while I was cooking real vegetables, and I thought, why would you bother? Just eat delicious vegetables. We don't try to make carrots out of meat. As I was reading about my guest today, Chris Croner, and his new book, A Burger to Believe In, as well as his eponymous Croner Burger restaurant, where they served the Impossible Burger, I started to think about things I love about a burger that aren't about it being meat. And so I say to you vegetarians, seek out a better burger or make your own, because the flaccid patties you get out of the freezer section don't stack up. Thanks, Chris, so much for joining me today on Feast Your Ears.
Hey, Harry, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. I'm really glad that, glad we get to chat about all things burger.
Yeah, so am I.
So, you know, July 4th is coming up in a few days, and I'm guessing that you, like me, are the kind of person who almost always chooses a burger over a hot dog at a party.
I often am the opposite.
Oh, really? Tell me about that.
Well, for the same reasons that you may not choose a hot dog, I often don't choose a burger.
All right.
I just often, you know, have no idea where the meat came from or what's in it, and or have tons of faith in the person cooking it.
Sure, sure, sure. I mean, I suppose that makes sense, right? I mean, you've written an entire book and dedicated yourself to perfecting everything that goes into, on, around, and about the burger. So I get that, you know, I guess most burgers probably fall short in your opinion, right?
Yeah, I mean, often I also have I grew up outside of Detroit, and so have an innate love for hot dogs.
Sure.
As well.
I gotcha. Absolutely. So, I mean, one of the things I would love to, you know, to touch upon, I mean, you know, people should definitely go out and check out your book. I mean, it really, you know, it does really present, you know, a lot of information if people want to go deep in how to make an incredible burger. And it's really great that you have a place to share your knowledge and all the work that you've done. You know, I want to know kind of like, How did that come about? What led to you being so obsessed with burgers that you would open an entire restaurant dedicated to them? Not that other people haven't done that in the past, but to really go deep into and to talk with people about what makes your burgers so great. I don't see McDonald's, for instance, you know, touting the fact that there might be as many as parts of 40 different cows in each of their burgers, right?
No, they definitely are not listing the cuts that go into their blood.
Yeah.
I moved to San Francisco. At this point, it was about 17 years ago. I went to culinary school here. And when I first became the executive chef of a restaurant, it was a restaurant called the Slow Club in the Outer Mission near Potrero Hill. It was kind of the quintessential San Francisco neighborhood restaurant. Relatively small, like 70 seats. We would have seats outdoors in the summer, a bar. And I mean, the people that ate there were a combination, like KQED is right up the street. So we had tons of people that came from KQED for lunch. San Francisco General Hospital is not far away. And then in the evening, the building above the restaurant was all a combination of like residential and live work lofts.
Huh.
So all of those people that lived in this big building ate in the restaurant, and then everyone from the neighborhood, in addition to just people from all over San Francisco. And that was really my second job in a kitchen. I started there as a sous chef and eventually became the chef. And that was kind of my first introduction to working with Sante Salvoni, who was the chef when I started. He was really, really focused on where everything came from that we used in the food that we made. So that was a bit of a revelation. And so in addition to serving all sorts of delicious food, the Slow Club had what was probably my first like revelatory restaurant burger. I used to, before working there, would often go to the Slow Club with a friend before we would go and see music and have a burger, have a bowl of pasta, pork chop, whatever. And that burger was just so, so delicious. It was unlike any burger that I had ever had in a restaurant before. And so I started working there, I realized that like 50% of the entrees that were served were burgers. So we served tons of hamburgers, and then we opened another restaurant with the owner of the Soul Club, Aaron Rooney, in Dogpatch a couple of years later. We had a burger there that became popular. And then when I became the chef of Bar Tartine, we also served a burger.
I ate one of your burgers at Bar Tartine once. It was fantastic.
Nice. That was, and at Bar Tartine, I really had the opportunity to like use a bun that was baked at Tartine Bakery, yeah, and work with dry aged meat and like strictly grass fed meat. I really just kind of hone in or had a lot more control over every part of that process and like the ability to make something very, very specific. And when I left Bar Tartine to work on a project in Los Angeles that ended up dragging on and not ever becoming reality, and took a temporary, what was intended to be a temporary job as a private chef. I lived on a really large grass-fed cattle ranch up in far northern California, and you know, had the opportunity to just see different different breeds of cow, of steer, the differences in those breeds when it came to eating the beef, experiment more with dry aging, do tons of butchery, actually slaughter animals, which was something that I had not ever, I had witnessed before, but not ever done myself. And so when that job ended, I didn't really want to open another, you know, fine dining restaurant or right, casual fine dining restaurant. And the thought was, because almost everyone has in the United States has some experience of a hamburger, some, you know, point of reference, and whether they like them or really like them,
right,
or don't like them.
Have you run across many people who in fact are like adamantly anti hamburger?
Not really.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious just because I feel like, I mean, it seems like it's a pretty hard food to like really hate. I mean, I can see that people are like divided about like weird fermented things like natto, you know what I mean? But like the hamburger seems pretty universally enjoyable.
Sure. And honestly, this happened at the Slow Club and has happened so many times since, we had a friend of mine who was the one of the bartenders at the Slow Club had been a vegan for a very long time and started eating meat again, after he had a hamburger at the Slow Club.
Yeah.
And then his wife did the same. And we have had that experience over and over, as recently as, it was like 3 weeks ago. I was up in Sonoma doing some book promotion at Scribe Winery. We kind of took over their menu at the Hacienda where they do their wine tastings for 5 days. And almost every day I had someone who was like, I haven't eaten meat in 7 years, right, and we're here. And you know, this is, you know, this seems so special. So I tried it and it was amazing.
That's kind of a heavy thing. I mean, you know, it sounds like it has worked out really well in most of those cases, but that's a pretty heavy thing to tell a chef. I mean, I feel like, I wonder what it's like for a bartender to have someone like walk up to the bar and be like, I've been sober for 7 years. Now give me a whiskey, right? Like that's kind of a weird.
I'd like to think that, If you haven't eaten meat in 6 years and you have a burger, you don't then go on a self-destructive hamburger bender.
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, I wasn't meaning to leap to that conclusion. I do have a friend who was sober for like 20 years and, you know, got sober in college and was a very young person when he had a real drinking problem. And now as an adult in his 40s has started drinking again and doesn't have a problem with it. So like, you know,
right.
But certainly like that's a weird thing. Like the first time, you know, I mean, I don't think he like announced that he'd been sober for 20 years when he like went and got a drink.
I'd wonder how willing that bartender would be to serve them that drink.
Totally. So I mean, do you have any, I mean, like, you know, this is probably a topic that you've been asked ad nauseum, but like, you know, if someone who is interested in really making better burgers, of course, I mean, they should obviously get your book, and they, yes, should study it. But if they're not going to go to say the links at like Tartine of like making the bun from scratch and that kind of thing, like what is the one most important thing that someone can do to make a better burger like right off the bat?
I mean, so when we set out to write the book, I kind of had this vision in my mind of it being this blueprint of you know, a very specific way to make in my opinion, the best burger.
Right.
Which is, I mean, so we use dry aged beef that comes from grass fed organic dairy animals, in the Central Valley here in California.
I mean, what a great way to use what is like a great resource. And I'm sure that those farmers were getting pennies on the dollar for that meat
totally.
Before, right? It was probably going into dog food or something. And
I
know full well that, I mean, a, you know, grass-fed dairy animal, even, I mean, and by the time it's past its useful age, is so much older than any of the other beef or most of the other beef that you're getting in this country, but it has a ton of flavor.
Right. And that, I mean, that was, so my friend Cliff Pollard, who started the company, is called Cream Co. I mean, identified that this was a huge opportunity. And if you were selective in the dairy animals that you chose, they very much could be restaurant quality. And he incentivized those dairy farmers by paying them the price that they would be paid if he was just buying organic grass-fed beef.
Hmm.
Because as you said, otherwise they just go to commodity auction and they get next to nothing yeah. after this, you know, this person has spent, you know, 7 to 12, 15 years taking care of these animals and, you know, making sure that they're living as best a life as they can and producing organic dairy for that amount of time. And then they, you know, just go to commodity auction.
Right. Right. Silly.
So this is certainly an improvement. And I mean, in my opinion, because they produce food for their entire life, it has a, you know, just a different kind of sustainability because they aren't just being fed to be killed at 18 months.
Yep.
So the original thought was like, okay, this is the one way you do it. We're going to go through this whole narrative of what specifically to use and why and how to bake the bun and how to do this and how to do that. And once we began talking to all sorts of different people, and I mean, the first thing we did was went to Whole Foods, we went to Safeway and like the little local grocery store that has a butcher counter next to my house. And just buy every kind of ground beef that we could. Packaged what was ground in the case, we had them grind specific pieces of meat, then made patties and, you know, compared every single, I think there were 32 or 33 different varieties, I guess.
Yeah.
And compared all of them side by side because we realized most people don't have access to what I have access to.
Sure. And most people aren't going to take the time to do that, right? I mean, totally. they might be interested and they might think, well, I'm going to go to the butcher because I read this blog and it says it should have a little bit of flank and it should have some short rib and it should have some of this. And then, you know, they're going to go ask their butcher, who's undoubtedly going to be a little annoyed when they're like, can I get 1 pound of meat ground from these right. three different things, right? And they're gonna be like, oh, are you kidding? You know, that's ridiculous. But I read about it on the internet. So I mean, I think it's great that you are able to undertake kind of a like scientific look at it to then make suggestions.
Right. I mean, and the other thing that I realized is it's like, this is, you know, what we serve at Kronenberger is my, you know, it's my personal ideal.
Right.
It isn't everyone.
Sure.
And there's got to be, you know, there has to be space for everyone's taste.
Yeah.
So once we got into writing the book, it became a lot more about like, okay, here's the story of what we do, why we do what we do. If you want to try and use these things, great. If not, here are all of these other access points kind of at any level of interest. Like if you're just going to go and buy everything at the store and you don't want to make anything, great. Here's some pointers for how, like little things that you can do to make a better burger, from selecting, you know, just, I mean, I think the easiest thing to do is just be more selective in the beef that you use.
Yeah.
People often have, the preconception that like grass fed is dry or tough or whatever. And it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it's, you know, the dairy animals that we use have next to no intramuscular fat. They have a small fat cap. The musculature is completely different from like an Angus animal.
Right.
So we add additional fat.
Right.
So we end up with like it's about 30% fat in the Kronenburger, partly because it's dry aged, partly because it's grass fed. So you can use really good beef and still get a, you know, unctuous, delicious hamburger. I mean, the other biggest differentiator that we found that was really easy to achieve was just using freshly ground beef.
Right.
Instead of buying either something packaged or, I mean, even the stuff in the butcher case, it's like you have less control over the taste and texture if it's something that's pre-ground. And if you don't want to grind it at home, sure, it might be annoying for the guy at the butcher counter, but they're also willing to do it. I've yet to experience a grocery store butcher that wouldn't just, it's like, hey, I want to, you know, some chuck and some short rib and we want a pound and a half. Like, will you grind it? Of course we'll grind it.
Yeah. I mean, I always encourage people to have a grinder at home, in part because I have two kids, and so it's a great thing to have them do.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it's just like, all right, you guys crank and I'll feed the meat into the grinder. Right. I mean, like, it's a good way to get the kids involved. And then I feel like it opens up so much other opportunity,
totally.
in terms of adding in other things of grinding your own lamb or, I mean, you know, cause like there are other things that sometimes it's harder to find, right. Harder to find ground lamb, things like that. So
yep.
I think it opens up a lot of opportunity. We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here. But before we do that, one of my children is in the studio with me today. I have my son, Frank, who's 4, and he's been patiently raising his hand because I think he has a question that he wants to ask. So I think Mr. Frank is going to ask you a question, Chris. Okay, Mr. Frank.
I need some fresh air now.
You what, buddy?
I need some fresh air now.
You need some fresh air? In this? Okay, well, we are in a tiny little studio. I get it. But do you have a question about hamburgers? Yes, what is it?
Why do hamburgers have more things than hot dogs?
Oh, you mean more stuff on top? Like, why do you serve them with more? That's a good question. Chris, you know, why do you think we have so many like toppings that people put? And I feel like it's gotten kind of out of hand in the past couple of years for how many toppings. Like, I saw a burger recently that I think had, you know, tomato and lettuce and onion and guacamole and jalapenos and cheddar cheese and ground up chips. And all of that was like on a bun together.
Yes. I think that once the like restaurant burger became a required menu item, people both had to find a way to differentiate, you know, what they were serving from what everyone else was serving, which led to, you know, leads to the customization of the toppings.
Yep. Unlike a place like Louis' Lunch where you can't get anything, you just get a burger on white bread.
Exactly. And I feel like people also often use the burger as it's the thing that they allow customers to like, okay, to add stuff to and to change. So that's why you end up with guacamole or I don't know, so many other toppings.
Right. Nobody's customizing their roast chicken or their like sole meunier, but you can get whatever you want on your burger.
I mean, I don't think a restaurant would be so keen on you adding like melted blue cheese and guacamole to your sole. but for some reason, the burger has become the vehicle to accommodate customer requests.
Yeah, totally. I get that.
And I guess, I don't know, maybe the popularity of places that, I forget what, like Fuddrucker places where the burger is your canvas to express yourself with movie nacho cheese. And,
yeah, and like thousands of calories.
Exactly. Jalapeno poppers.
Yeah, totally. Well, we're gonna take a short break here from one of our sponsors. When we come back, I wanna talk about burgers that don't have any meat.
Think about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Chris Croner. His new book, A Burger to Believe In, written with Paolo Lucchese, has recently come out. And if you're a fan of burgers, I suggest that you take a look. Before the break, we were talking about the overstuffed American-ness of burgers, and we were talking about where Chris gets his meat using up old grass-fed dairy animals. But now I want to talk about the Impossible Burger. I believe, Chris, that your restaurant was one of the first to serve it. Is that correct?
Yeah, so when we started serving the Impossible Burger, I think we were one of like eight in the country. We were the only in the East Bay. Now that they have like a full-on production facility in Oakland, it's pretty widely available. But when we started, we were one of a small handful of restaurants that had access to it.
So before that, did you make your own veggie burgers? I mean, was that something that you had explored?
Yeah, and we still do. And that's the recipe in the book. It's the Earth Burger.
Got it.
At the pop-up, we had it was sort of a revolving cast of all sorts of different vegan burgers, from falafel to we did like a marinated fried tofu that was similar to like a fish fillet kind of situation. I played with all sorts of things, beets. Aside from the falafel, I never really want to use like legumes, like fried legumes. I just always feel like it ends up as this kind of not wonderful texture, and not really that reminiscent of not necessarily eating meat, but just something that holds together in the same way that a hamburger patty would.
Right. And I think that people always sort of go to legumes and often go to tofu as a sub for meat and protein. And I believe part of that has to do with what we've been kind of like sold over the years in this country of, you know, like needing to have protein on your plate and needing to have carbohydrates on your plate. And you know what I mean? And like, so people are like, totally. Oh, well, I need a protein, and my protein can't be beef, so it's going to be this other thing.
Right. I mean, and the other, I think, you know, if you don't eat or make a ton of vegetarian food, I feel like when people, you know, people's initial thought may be like, well, what's vegetarian? It's like a grain bowl or a bowl of lentils and roasted beets.
Right.
And those are just kind of like the most obvious things that people tap to make some kind of veggie burger.
Right.
So we still make the Earth Burger. And so once we're getting ready to open Croner Burger. We did a couple of tastings of just all sorts of different food, and a couple of the evenings where we did these tastings, we made entirely vegan menus. And the goal with the vegetarian patty that we made was to, because I'm in Northern California, it was to be gluten-free.
Right.
Dairy-free, allium-free, and also to hold together in a way that felt more reminiscent of a burger. So we use a combination of cooked Yukon Golden sweet potatoes that are like whipped or mixed in a stand mixer to, you know, kind of give them some glutinous qualities.
Nice.
To hold the patty together.
Yeah.
And then roasted. And
they stick more like a sausage, like the way what happens when you whip up ground meat.
Totally. Oh, that's exactly. Cool. And then in addition to that, we just really wanted to use, you know, vegetables, whole cooked vegetables. So there's roasted cabbage, carrots, broccoli, cauliflower, brown mushrooms. In the beginning, we also put wood ear mushrooms in the mix because it added a little textural variance. Sure. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then roasted tofu. And we blend all of that together, or roast all the vegetables and then shred them or grind them and then combine them with the potato. And then they can be baked, but I have found that they hold together best if they're fried, like blanched in oil and then refried. So you end up with like a pretty crispy exterior and a really nice interior as well. And when that first evening that we served them, one of my good friends who was there eating, who actually was a vegetarian, actually thought that he was eating a hamburger.
Oh, wow. but he was not intending to you know, be off the wagon.
No, well, and subsequently, he actually, at one of those tastings, did eat a hamburger.
Okay.
And then months later, I was down in L.A., and I went to pick him up at his apartment. And he was like, I want to walk and take you to this place that I've been eating at a lot lately. I think you'll really like it. And we walked up the street, and it was the Shake Shack that they had opened in Hollywood. And he had been sneaking out of his apartment and secretly eating hamburgers for months. And now he's back to eating meat as well.
Wow, that's I like that. So so you're one of 12 children.
yes, through so both of my parents, both of my parents are remarried. My mother relatively recently, and my father has been remarried since for 10 years.
Okay.
And so my stepmother had three kids and my stepfather has six and there are two of us.
Wow.
So now there are 11 of us running the gamut from, 26 to 49.
Wow.
I believe.
All right. And do you guys ever all get together? I mean, and then I guess the subsequent question is like, do you then have to make burgers for the whole family?
So funny you should say that. My brother Patrick was married in the fall. And so we had before their like big wedding party, we had a party at my mom's house for like 100-ish people. And so I flew beef and buns and pickles and cheddar mayonnaise home to North Carolina. And we essentially had a Kronenburger pop up in my mom's backyard.
Oh,
so that has definitely happened.
Well, I mean, and I mean, what a nice thing to do for your family, right?
Exactly.
I mean, to get to be able to do that. I think that's super cool.
It's also fun seeing, I mean, so, my stepfather's kids, most of them, I guess all but one have kids of their own. So there's lots of nieces and nephews around, and it's actually been like a compliment from a child is kind of the best. I feel like a compliment from a child and a compliment from like someone who's really, really old are the best, the most honest compliments. And so it's been fun to see, you know, like a 7-year-old eat really rare dry aged dairy beef and love it.
Yeah. I mean, well, and also to be able to be exposed to it, right?
Totally.
At that young age. I mean, that's, you know, that's awesome.
Totally.
So, I mean, do you ever get sick of burgers, or have you, like, have you recently found yourself at all? I mean, you've been touring for the book, you've been going around, you were just in New York for like a week and a half, something like that.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We cooked a diner at Ops. We did a demo at Williams Sonoma, which is where this woman who seemed like she was probably 90 said that it was the best hamburger that she had ever had, which was pretty funny.
Yes.
And then we did a party of Vice last Thursday.
Right. So, I mean, have you recently at all had a moment where you're like, you know what? I just want a salad.
Well, we serve a lot of salads. Kroner Burger for sure. And I eat a lot of salads,
right.
But I don't ever, I mean, to be honestly, like, because it's such a, it's never exactly the same,
yeah.
The beef.
Right.
Just because, you know, because of varying times in the dry aging, or various amounts of dry aging, in addition to the fact that just the beef itself, it's not a static product. Like, they, you know, they come from working animals. Some of them are 7 years old. Some of them are 12 years old. So they're, you know, all completely individual. So it's never really exactly the same.
Right.
In addition to the fact that I'm constantly trying to, you know, to make tweaks and change things and improve it. So I don't think, when I worked at the Soul Club, I probably ate at least a hamburger a day, sometimes two. I definitely don't do that anymore. but I still eat plenty of hamburgers. I actually ate restaurant hamburgers while I was in New York as well. So,
well, of course, because you want to try other people's version, right? I mean, like, now you're not just researching for your book, you're researching to see what other people are doing with it. I mean, it is, as I said in the opening, like, I do think that it is kind of the quintessential American food.
For sure.
Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any other events coming up that you want to mention?
Let's see. We will be in LA this week, cooking at Justa on this Friday, which I believe is the 29th.
Yep.
And then we'll be back in LA later in the month with a couple of pop-ups. Back in New York pretty soon. We're opening a new restaurant that is not Kroner Burger, but we'll absolutely have burger, patty melt, Earth Burger in San Francisco in September, and then we'll take it from there. We're hoping to make it out to Austin, Chicago, Portland, and Asheville before the year is over to do pop-ups as well.
That's killer. Well, I look forward to catching up with you the next time you're in New York, and I for one will be going home to check out making the Earth Burger soon. I definitely want to try my hand at a vegetarian version of the burger, just to see what I can produce at home.
Yeah, I'd love to. And we essentially make it, the top it in the exact same way as the Kroner Burger. You can use, there's a recipe for a vegan mayonnaise made with soy milk. But otherwise, it's pretty, the setup is identical. So I would love to hear your feedback.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely will. Well, thanks for joining me. You can find out more about Kroner Burger at kronerburger.com. It's Kronner burger.com. You can follow Chris on social media at Kroner Burger, at Kroner C for your personal account, right? And then at Henry's_Berkeley, which is another restaurant we didn't even have time to talk about. But if you're out on the West Coast, you should definitely check that out. And so I would like to leave, I'm going to leave everybody today, Chris, with the recipe from the book for the Bar Tartine Burger, because I feel like that at least will get people, hopefully everybody's in the mood with July 4th coming up to make some burgers. But I feel like this just at least outlines a couple of like tips and tricks in the making and the cooking and the forming of the burger to really get people on their way to making a much better burger.
And there are also plenty of recipes for July 4th. Applicable sides and salads in there. So
awesome. So Chris's recipe for the Bar Tartine Burger: divide the beef into 4 6-ounce balls, handling minimally. Put a sheet of plastic wrap over a 4-inch ring mold on a cutting board or other hard surface. Put a ball in the middle of the mold and gently press down with the palm of your hand, forming a patty that is 4 inches wide. Pop it out with the plastic wrap. Put the patties on a large dish or a small baking sheet and refrigerate until ready to cook. In a cast iron pan or on a grill over high heat, cook the onion slices until charred on both sides, 2 to 3 minutes. Remove from the heat, transfer to a small bowl, and toss with sherry vinegar. Set aside. Salt both sides of each patty. I think that's very important. Before you begin cooking the burgers, get the buns toasting. Heat a cast iron skillet or similar surface over medium-low heat. Slice the buns in half horizontally. Smear 2 tablespoons of butter on the buns and place butter side down on the hot surface, working in batches if necessary. Toast until golden brown. 6 to 8 minutes, adjusting the heat if necessary. You want to do your best to time their completion to the burger cooking. While the buns toast, cook the patties. So there you have it. I hope everybody goes out and enjoys some burgers for July 4th. Thanks, Chris, for joining me, and I hope everybody will check out A Burger to Believe In.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Big thank you to David Tatasciore for engineering. Don't forget to head over to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and support this and all the other great shows here on HRN. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please take a moment to like the show if you did, in fact, like it today. And you can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. Follow me on social media, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.